Welcome to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham, sitting in for Cynthia Canty. Celebrity suicides hit different people different ways. A lot of people were affected by the recent death of Kate Spade. Disbelief, sadness, in some cases, judgment. Me? I was affected by the death of Anthony Bourdain. He was a chef, writer, a star of several shows on food and travel, and he had an attitude that I really appreciated. He took his own life at age 61, leaving behind an 11-year-old daughter. In the U.S., suicide rates are going up, and the Centers for Disease Control reported recently between 1999 and 2016, 25 states experienced increases of suicide by more than 30%. We thought we'd call in Dr. Farha Abbasi to talk about suicide. She's a professor of psychiatry at Michigan State University. Welcome back, Dr. Abbasi.
Thank you, Lester.
Here's one of the questions on my mind. How can we spot signs of distress, the telltale signs that someone might be contemplating suicide?
Like you started the program talking about these two amazing, successful people, and people are shocked that how could this happen to them. So I think the first thing to understand is that suicide is very non-discriminatory. It doesn't matter what age you are, what income group you belong to, what's your education level, social standing, race, or gender. And I wish there was some clear-cut signs or test or diagnosis that we could come out with and say, oh, definitely this person is going to attempt or complete a suicide. But unfortunately, we do not have clear indications. Even as provider, as loved ones, you're always going back and thinking, what could be done more? What could we have done differently? But definitely knowing your loved ones, or in my case, my patients, you do start to pick patterns and baseline functioning and can observe some changes. So the biggest important thing to look out for is sudden changes in behavior and lifestyle patterns. And I have broken it down into cluster of symptoms. So somebody could be sleeping excessively or not sleeping, could be highly irritable, aggressive, angry, feeling sad, feeling fatigued, very irritable, or somebody can suddenly become very happy, elated, very positive. Because what we are realizing that people, when they do attempt or are starting to contemplate suicide, it could be something that you are really thinking about, planning and meditating and premeditative planning for on a long-term basis, because you have been suffering this chronic pain and disillusionment and trauma and vulnerability. So you almost hold this thought of suicide as a way to get yourself free, to finally have something to hold on to. So it's very comforting for them to hold on to the thought of suicide. Some people and some patients would come to you and say, we even have identified a date or a time period or a goal. But then there are those who impulsively act out.
Well, let's talk about if we have a friend or somebody, a family member who's we're worried about, but we're not really sure because these signs you indicated, these symptoms are pretty wide-ranging and different. How do you approach someone that you think might be struggling, but you really don't want to question whether they're thinking about suicide? Should we even ask?
You should definitely ask, because that's one myth that talking about suicide is going to trigger something in them. They actually, it can be a source of relief for them that you are finally having that conversation. And like you said, Lester, in terms of intervention, I kind of think of it in three E's. So I want to give it like this as tools, as three important E's are empathy. Empathy is about walk in their shoes. Do active listening. It's not about you telling them what to do, but to know what they are doing to cope with this. And this listening has to be open, without judgment, without shame, with an open heart and an open mind. Change the language from what is wrong with you to what wrong has happened to you, and from telling them how to cope to how are you coping, and empower them. by validation of their trauma, their experiences, their pain, and engage them by spending time, sharing laughter, sending them notes, texts, thoughtful gestures, anything to keep showing them that you are there. You are there as a safe place that they can always return to.
What can you do if someone is threatening to take their own life right now?
Definitely, the severity and safety is on top of everything. If somebody is threatening, the first important thing is, what situation they are in. Are they by themselves, or are they in some kind of a crowd? Do they have access to guns or any other violent method? Are they standing on the top of a bridge? What is their situation, immediate situation? Are you there? Are they calling you? So first important thing is talking to them. Because like I was talking about, if it is something impulsively they are deciding to do, then it takes 12 to 15 seconds of that intense emotion. And if somebody can walk them through that 15 seconds or bring them back, that can be life-changing for them. So first thing is continue engaging them, talking to them. At the same time, make sure you are calling 911 or a close by cop or police, whatever the situation is. But continue talking to them. Continue to engage them. Keeping that communication and conversation going can be life-saving. But then comes the second stage is once you police is involved or 911 is called or an ambulance is called, then how do you navigate the system? So most probably they would be taken to an ER where they're assessed for suicidal severity. And once it's confirmed and a diagnosis is given, then they are admitted to inpatient psych hospital.
I want to talk about the worst case scenario. Missed the signs, didn't understand what was happening. Your friend or your family member is gone now. And you're sitting there wondering, oh my gosh, what should I have done? What did I miss? How did I let this happen? There's a lot of survivor's guilt in many cases when someone takes their life. How do you deal with that?
That's the toughest thing to deal with. But again, like I told you, be it a loved one or be it someone you had been treating, you have to understand that in the end, they are the ones who were in pain. You have to think about them and what they were suffering. It is not about who you were or what you did or did not do. It was about them, about their pain. So learning to understand that, forgiving them, and understanding it wasn't a failure on your part. It wasn't something you could have done more. It's like learning to forgive yourself with that too, because we have to understand that suicide is not a moral, ethical, spiritual, mental, or medical failure. It is a public health crisis of our times, and we have to deal with it coming together as a community, putting our resources together. But if you start to feel guilty, make it about yourself, then you are just perpetuating and continuing the suffering of somebody completing suicide or experiencing death by suicide.
There's stigma associated with suicide that people make judgments about it. I've heard people call it a cowardly act. Others say, look, it's a choice. And others say, look, suicide is simply a symptom of depression. How do you understand suicide?
Suicide is very complex. It can be a symptom of a disease, and mind you, it can be a symptom of mental illness. It can be a symptom of you suffering from some incurable medical issue, like getting a diagnosis of Huntington's disease, dementia. Lewy body dementia, a lot of people can't handle that and feel like I would become a burden, I would rather end my life. So it can be a symptom of a disease, but it can also be due to social stressors. something happening in their life. It could be poverty, it could be homelessness, it could be about vulnerability, about trauma that you have suffered and can't deal with it anymore. So this pain is not only physical, it is emotional, but it is almost psychic pain. It's about psychic wounds that sometimes your body forgets the trauma it has suffered, but the mind remembers it. And that's the pain we are talking about here. And that's why it's so hard to get to this pain for them and for their loved ones and for the providers.
Dr. Farha Abbasi is a professor of psychiatry at Michigan State University. Dr. Abbasi, thanks very much.
Thank you.